Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific. Coming up in this edition, the U.S. presidential candidates talk tough about China. First, Fiji invites the United Nations labor delegation to the country and then expels them. And then, later on in the program, an exclusive interview with the creator of Drought and Rain, a dance production that tells the stories from the Vietnam War. This is Focus Asia Pacific, putting the focus on the Asia Pacific. The trade battle between the United States and China is heating up. Washington has filed a new complaint against Beijing with the World Trade Organization, and in turn, China has done the same. It comes as U.S. President Barack Obama and his challenger Mitt Romney continue to talk tough on the emerging world power ahead of the elections in November. Askar Surbakhti has the story.
Relations with China have featured prominently on the presidential campaign trail in the United States. Both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney are accusing each other of not being tough enough against Beijing. The Republican candidate says the U.S. president isn't standing up to the world's second largest economy.
I think it would be appropriate if the president would talk to China in a straight talk manner. They have manipulated their currency for well over a decade. They've taken American jobs. And I think it's totally appropriate to show backbone and strength as we deal with the other nations around the world. Nothing wrong with telling people the truth.
But Barack Obama has hit back on his latest campaign stop in Cincinnati, Ohio.
He's been running around Ohio claiming he's going to roll up his sleeves and he's going to take the fight to China. His experience has been owning companies that were called pioneers in the business of outsourcing jobs to countries like China. Now, Ohio, you can't stand up to China when all you've done is sent them our jobs. You can talk a good game, but I like to walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
And to prove that he's walking the walk, Mr. Obama has announced that he's making another complaint to the World Trade Organization against China, this time accusing it of illegally subsidizing car exports. Washington now has 10 cases against Beijing at the WTO. Speaking in Ohio, which is a manufacturing state that could be a decider in the November election, Mr. Obama has talked up his actions against China.
We've brought more trade cases against China in one term than the previous administration did in two. My administration's launching a new action against China. These are subsidies that directly harm working men and women on the assembly lines in Ohio and Michigan and across the Midwest. And we are going to stop it. It is not right. It is against the rules, and we will not let it stand.
Soon after he revealed his plans, China responded with its own complaint to the trade body, saying the U.S. has unfairly applied tariffs on 24 Chinese export products. But some analysts say Barack Obama's latest actions are purely political. Tom Switzer is a research associate at the United States Study Center at the University of Sydney.
Well, I think this just reflects a long trend in American politics. We've had many Republicans and Democrat politicians bagging China, particularly on the trade front. But when they're in office, very rarely do they put into practice their tough, hawkish language on trade protectionism.
Other experts say America's grievances are more than just political maneuvers. John Lee is an expert on China at the Hudson Institute in Washington, who's currently at the University of Sydney.
Now, the timing of this WTO action is politically motivated by the Obama camp, but the issues are still substantive, and we still have to sort out the issue of China not playing by the rules that it signed up to.
America's latest complaint comes amid ongoing calls for China to allow its currency to strengthen and reflect its true value. Both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney say they'll keep on pushing Beijing on the issue while pledging to maintain a good relationship with the country. John Lee from the University of Sydney doesn't believe the tit-for-tat complaints will damage relations between the United States and China.
I know it looks very ugly, and I know there's a lot of loud noises being made, but this has been brewing for a while. They have brought each other to the WTO a number of times, I think 16 times by my count, and this is really just part and parcel of two countries fairly harshly negotiating the terms of the trade relationship.
A delegation from the International Labour Organization has been expelled from Fiji. They were in the country at the invitation of the coup-installed military government to investigate claims by local trade unions that workers' rights were not being respected. So far, no reason has been given for the expulsion of the delegation. Next, Bruce Hill speaks to the General Secretary of the Fiji Trade Unions Congress, Felix Anthony. He says the members of the United Nations-affiliated body have not been allowed to speak to anyone, apart from their first meeting with the Minister of Labour, which was cut short.
The delegation arrived in Fiji on Sunday and was to meet with the Minister on Monday and the Fiji Trade Union Congress and other stakeholders during the week. Halfway through their meeting on Monday with the Minister received a telephone call, obviously giving him a directive to discontinue the meeting and to have further consultations with his colleagues in government. Unfortunately, the delegation was not able to see anyone in government until late Monday evening, I'm told, where the Permanent Secretary in the Prime Minister's office raised a couple of concerns with the delegation. Since then, the delegation has not been able to meet with any of the stakeholders. Now, this delegation arrived in Fiji by invitation of the Prime Minister.
Now, what's happened to them today?
I'm told that around 11 o'clock this morning or so, the Prime Minister's office wrote to the head of the mission and advised the mission that it ought to leave Fiji as soon as possible. I believe that the mission is leaving Fiji this evening.
My understanding was that the ILO were invited to Fiji by the government to see for themselves that, in the words of the government, that there was no trouble and this talk about trade union rights was exaggerated.
The Prime Minister actually invited the delegation to come and see for themselves. Unfortunately, I don't believe you can take this regime on its word. This is not the first time the government's the regime's behaved in this manner. You will recall that similarly, the Attorney General had invited the Australian and New Zealand the trade unions to come to Fiji to see for themselves the reality on the ground. When the invitation was undertaken, they were refused entry into Fiji. And now we see a similar situation arising with the International Labour Organization contact mission.
Are you aware if any reason has been given for the expulsion of the delegation?
No, I'm not aware of any reasons that have been given. There cannot be any valid reasons for the expulsion, more particularly after they were invited to Fiji. And Fiji, being a member of the International Labour Organization, ought to have respected the delegation's visit and participated. And if it truly believed that it was doing the right thing, I'm sure the government would have had absolutely no difficulty in convincing the ILO that it was doing the right thing. Clearly, the government now sees that it cannot continue with its bluff to tell the world that everything is good and fine in this country, that workers' rights are respected, and I think they've given up even before they've started trying to talk to the ILO.
The International Labour Organization has sent this official delegation to Fiji at the invitation of the Fiji government. It's now been expelled. The ILO is a branch of the United Nations, so are there going to be any international ramifications for the Fiji interim government from this?
Well, clearly, you know, this brings further disrepute to Fiji as a country, as a member of the UN, as a member of the ILO, and the international community. And it does no good for the regime to behave in the manner that they have. I'm not quite sure what actions will be or can be taken, but clearly, I believe that the regime has done itself a great disfavor.
Why would the Fiji interim government invite a delegation from the ILO to come to Fiji and see the situation for themselves and then expel them? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, it clearly doesn't make any sense. It does no good for their reputation or credibility at all. But we are all at a loss at such behavior of the regime itself. I believe the international community needs to roundly condemn Fiji's behavior. You know, this is absolutely uncalled for. And more particularly an organization of the standing of the International Labour Organization. And Fiji ought to respect its obligation to the ILO and also to respect the core labour standards, which by virtue of its membership, it is obligated to respect.
That was Felix Anthony, the General Secretary of the Fiji Trade Union Congress, speaking with Bruce Hill. You're listening to Focus Asia Pacific. Drought and Rain is a dance theater production that tells the stories from the Vietnam War. In its current version, the production showcases 12 Vietnamese women who console wounded soldiers at the front lines. These women are from the rural farms of Vietnam and are now touring the world presenting their stories through dance. The production was created by French-Vietnamese choreographer Y Sola. She speaks next to Radio Australia's Adeline Nai, the story differences from generation to generation about the Vietnam War and how it is celebrated through the cultural memory.
There is different levels. It is about the war, but I would like to say not about the war as the war is terrible and all those, For me, it was that the war, why there is the war, for example, and who crossed the war. I would like to see their face, you know. So I met then a lot of people in Vietnam, of course. The ladies, which was dancers when they was young, and they stopped dancing because of the war. And then when I do the research, I re-meet them. And then I want to make a work about the memory of war. And it was more about their voice, their feelings, their voice. So the movement here is not the movement about the war, but the movement about the culture, the Vietnamese culture, the very old culture, and these people who are farmer people, so their movement is a 1,000 years movement, because in their daily they always do the same movement, because the work they have to done every day, every year, every month, under the sky, the rain, the sun, and the story, the history. So they have so many. You know, for me, the Vietnamese culture, during the war, I have heard songs that I don't know the name of, and I want to know what is this song, because I cannot forget and stay with
That's
me.
That's from your childhood, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, yes. So this is a levels also in it. And there is a personal things also to work on it. Is I went to France. I'm from two culture, France and Vietnam. But I went to France and then I went to go back to Vietnam. And I would like to have the Vietnamese point of view about the history, this last war in Vietnam, through the daily, the anonymous people.
And it's quite a different history because, I mean, the world knows it as the Vietnam War, but in Vietnam it's known as the American War.
Yeah.
And the stories that these women tell, you have 12 women performing, and I understand that these are non-professional performers, and they're taken from farms in Vietnam. So prior to you meeting them, they hadn't traveled. They lived very much a rural life.
This was the 1995, but after that I have done another Drug and Rain with young people. This was in 2005. So I wanted to understand these children who have father, grandfather, who have fought so much for the peace. What do they think about the war they see? They seen on TV and on newspaper. They told me they don't care. They have to work. They have to, you know. And
so the Vietnam War meant nothing to them, to the younger generation.
Yes. And then it was interesting because finally they realized that they didn't ask their father why the father have that silence always, or that pain, he cannot eat anything as he want because from the war. So this was in 2005. We travel also, we perform in the US through 8 universities. And then this time in 2011, we recreate that Jonathan Mills from Australia, who is the director of the Edinburgh Festival, would like to, he asked me to remake, you know, and I really thank him always because I'm so happy now to remake it because I cannot remake with the ladies from 1995. They're too old today.
They're in their 90s now.
Yes. So I have met new women, which was singer. When they was very young, they go to the front to sing, to consolate the soldiers. And that touched me so much because the other ladies was the one who have to take the gun to protect their province, their villages. But this one, they have no gun. They just go to the front and with their voice, they consolate the, you know, the people. The wounded soldiers. Yes, the soldiers. So this time is this with this woman. And for me, that bring my work something, you know, suddenly I go about the memory of war. So it is nearly for me nothing to do with memory of war anymore. Mm. But the memory of us, of the world, of the ancient, you know, from us from the beginning. We always have to fight, finally, something like that. For our eating, for our survival, and it's like something was so, it's marked us, and something like maybe we repeat, tell me like that, we repeat something that we are afraid. I'm sorry, my English is not.
Oh, you're doing fine. I'll just let our listeners who have just tuned in that we are speaking with Ayaz Sola, who's the choreographer of the dance production Drought and Rain, which tells the story of Vietnamese women during the Vietnam War. But this current group of women that you're working with, the 12 women, you say they're younger. They're still in their 50s. Is that correct?
They're 55 to 73.
Right. Mm. How... Yeah. But their memories of war, is that much different? Because they would have seen the same trauma. I mean, they went to the front line visiting wounded soldiers and some of them probably on their deathbeds. And even though they chose, their job was to sing and console these soldiers compared with the previous generation that you worked with who, you know, operated guns. Mm.
The previous one, they have crossed the French periods. So, of course, it's absolutely different. This one, they cross another time, really. There is TV already at that time, right? But, I mean, maybe when you are in front of such a war, especially this one, the most till today, we didn't have any other war heavy as this one, right? So, but anyone... I think when you see the death, when you see the killing, when you see the blood, that blood. So
in a sense, were they any less traumatized than the older generation that you worked with? Or do you think the songs...
No, you know, it is about the... This work also, it is a work that I want to work about the consciousness, to take consciousness. And in nowadays... I don't know if we take consciousness about who we are and where we are living, in which system we are living. So I think this is since ever, you know, have we enough consciousness about our life, about what we are crossing, we are living. So for this woman, we cannot compare, is it more strong before for the previous one or this one? Mm. I think the pain is the pain, and each one have his own, I mean, legitimacy to say this is destroy my life, right? So
their stories are interesting in itself, but these are also women that you, I understand, this group of women and also the past group of women that you worked with, living in rural farms, and now they're thrust into this world of dance theatre production. So from what they've known of a farming life, they've gone to a life that deals with airports, hotels, aeroplanes, and performing in front of groups. Is that something that they are comfortable with, that they love doing, that it's quite a different life, isn't it? How are they coping with it all?
They are very deep people. They are deep. So airplanes, hotels, this is something, you know, on the surface. The main things, it is about the work. And this work transformed them. Usually I think when people love what they do, that will transform you, right? So this transformed them. So this is make me happy, because my purpose is not about saying that war is terrible, but through this work is that we can go through and we go somewhere else. Of course, we will continue to remember it. But yeah, to transform something from that point. So yes, the work, the main things is that. So we came here today for the first time for me in Australia. But here are other places. It will be always the main important things that we will be in front of the audience. And which is not, let's say, production as usually we consider, you know. It is more something, because they it's not their work, their profession. So we do this more by experience and something more like unique moment in our life and for them. So it's unique, it's a real thing, something like that. For them to be on stage, and the stage here is not to show them that I go to show you myself, no, but I would like to, I will talk to maybe also the ghost.
Yeah. Talking to ghosts?
To the ghost.
While they're performing?
Why not? Yeah. You know,
and what are they trying to communicate with the ghosts, or what does it do for them?
You and I, we communicate with the ghosts because we use the words that there is people before who create. So our words, when we use, we didn't create, you know. So there is ghost. The ghost is not the ghost or the absent. Let's say maybe the person who are not here, you know, the absent. The one who are not here.
Right.
So when we talk, and when we work also, because something is not here, something is not, so we do with that, you know. So on stage she's doing also with the absent, and we make something because there is the absent of something, right? So the audience also maybe came to see something because there is the absent of something. Looking for something, waiting something, searching something. Yeah.
It's quite a stark production. I believe most of them, the performers, these women are all wearing white traditional shirts. They wear black pants, black sunglasses, or is that the initial production? It's quite abstract. The production, all your productions are quite abstract. They're modern abstract pieces. So communicating their stories, communicating what they want to say, is that a bit of a challenge sometimes?
Of course, you say most of my work is quite abstract, but of course you didn't see my work. So you just say like that, right?
I've seen snippets, yes.
Yes, of course, because you have to do
your
work,
that's right?
Yes. But, you know, the abstraction, there is many ways to understand what means abstraction. So I want to say the abstraction is not so abstract. It is an aesthetic. It is a language to say something maybe more focused in the essential, for example, or more economically to go to the essential. And it is an aesthetic. So the abstraction doesn't mean science could be very abstract, but it's not abstract. It's very concrete also. It's very scientist also, you know. So the abstraction is an aesthetic, right? It's in languages. So, yes, it is not Baroque. Yeah, but it is about us. Yeah, it is about us.
Time is escaping us, so I have to end this interview. But this is a very personal project for you, isn't it? Because you were born in Vietnam, your mother was French, your father was a freedom fighter.
Well, it's not worse. My mother is. She's not worse.
She is. Yes. Apologies for that. But your father fought against the Americans. So this is your story as well. You were very much.
This is our story. Yeah, it was collective. Yeah, and not also us, but also the American people. Yes. And also the French before, because today they forget. Even they forget, something stayed there in their reaction about Indochina or about colonies, you know. But it is also about American people, of course. For me, we went to U.S. And for me, it was so important, not in the first time, in 2005 with the young. Then, you know, I have done nearly 13 years. Then I have met young American. Then I have my consolation then, you know.
Mm.
Yes. And before is the, yeah, and they also, yeah. So the people who fight to kill each other, they don't know each other. And when the war ends, they have to move away. They didn't see each other. But what we need actually, finally, you know, is to meet, because we never asked that. But my question is, we never asked that. It's hard, but why we continue? Why we do that? And when we say about war, it's quite abstract, because we say war, but without taking consciousness what we mean when we say war. When we say war, we say killing. We say about official killing, because killing is not permit, but the officials say, now we kill, and then we go and we kill. So this is war, and more than that again, but we don't have enough time to
yes.
Right? To say scientifically, objectively, and not with the emotion. The words war is too abstract.
And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Focus Asia Pacific. If you'd like to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is focus@pcjmedia.com. Once again, focus@pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of the whole team, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. Bye-bye, everyone.